This is Billy Kay, welcoming you to a celebration of the history of the Scots Lied, first broadcast in 1986. In the 18th century, scrivers like Alan Ramsay whiles gied the name Doric to their Scots. Doric had been a rockle kintry variety of ancient Greek, gay different for the Attic standard Greek spoken in Athens lang syne. And when I was wee among all our folk in Ayrshire, you would still hear Doric used often to describe the Ayrshire dialect. Now though, the term is mostly confined to the north-east, where Niarán and Obidi cries their dialect of Scots Doric. The readers are Gerda Stevenson, Peter Raffin and John Shedden. The Scots Dung, Programme 3, The Buchan Hertland.
The trouble with folk nowadays is, if they speak their mother tongue, they think that it's cheap or hardly in keeping with the times that are, you see. And they're ashamed to use it. Now, when I hear folks speaking that way, I just come over with the brightest Doric that I can possibly give them. So that lets them see that I'm not caring a doubt about their English, that I'm a native of this bit of Scotland, and I would very much like to keep our native tongue alive. And there's nothing bothers me more when I'm in company to hear my young folk coming on with great lumgummies. English more or less just signify nothing when they could say it in a sentence in the language it belongs to them.
Duncan Muirden, a farmer from Clatt in Aberdeenshire, the Buchan heartland where many believe the best spoken Scots exist today. The distinctive sounds of the Aberdeenshire Scots, or Doric as they cry it in the northeast, have existed for centuries. Gwyd and squeal are quite different from Ma Ayrshire, gid and skill. Ma whit wai is their fit woy. Mai chuch is their chuch. Rocht is vrocht. And knees can be knees among older speakers there. But why are dialects so different and the Buchan one so unique? Derek McClure of Aberdeen University.
Communications until quite recently in Scotland were very bad, and so the different communities grew up in more or less isolation from each other, and so the local dialects tended to go their own ways. And in some parts of Scotland this has lasted till the present day. In several parts, Aberdeenshire, the Borders, Galloway, Ayrshire, they all still have very strong regional dialects which are quite different from each other.
And Aberdeenshire happens to be one of the strongest Scots-speaking areas.
Yes, they call it the Doric, and there's a much more conscious effort in Aberdeenshire than in some other parts of Scotland to keep it alive. There's poetry competitions in the Doric, there's the local branch of the Scots Language Society. I say they because although I'm speaking from Aberdeen, I'm not a native Aberdonian myself. I come from Ayrshire, and it's something that I have noticed very much since coming to Aberdeen, how conscious they are and how proud they are of their local dialect traditions.
In the 15th and 16th centuries, writers from Aberdeenshire used a standard form of written Scots based on the Lothian speech of the capital and the royal court. But as the status of Scots as the national language declined, writers in the northeast began to write in their own dialect, in a way reflecting the attitude of its speakers, who see it belonging to the region rather than part of the language of the nation. Since the 19th century, in fact, Aberdeenshire has been the centre of some of the most vibrant dialect literature in Scotland. Flora Gary's poem Benny Gook is a fine example.
It was just a skelp o' the muckle firth, a sclider o' roch gron, fin grandfather's fodder broke it in for the header and the fun. Grandfather sclatted barn and byer, brocht water to the close, but fell dykes ben the bar brae face, and a kert road till the moss. But weir fodder sotter to the yert, and skip it amo' bees, and keep it fancy jukes and doos, it werena muckle ease. He bocht all wizened horse and kye, and scrimpet muck and seed, saying, clochering wi' a crachly host, he dwined awa' indeed. I look far o'er by Aithen's side, to Fyvie's lech lith lands, to Achter Less and Benachie, and the mist blue Grampians. Sair to the hull o' Benny Gok, and Scunner to the firm, can I bid dared, can I bid dared I'd flit the coming term.
The farming way of life of the great firm toons with their scores of ploughmen is a thing of the past. Duncan Muirden lived through that era. Even then there were pressures against the dialect, though most resisted them.
They're far more expressive in their own language. They're having to think and translate all the time when they're putting it into English.
But did you not say it was the same thing for you when you was a loon?
Exactly the same. But I began to rebel, you see. I was told at the school to speak English. I was got right English, fair enough. I was maybe right and proper. When we get the young farmers, we learned speech marking there. I was told to deliver that in English. And I says to myself, I'm not biting in England. Where? We belong to Scotland. Damn it. Who can I not speak? Remember their tongue. What was yogurt we? I think it's just as good as the English, if not better. And a lot of words a day and I got. So I just get right on. And at every opportunity, spark them with their tongue as best as I could.
Surely in this year to Scotland, the Doric, the Buchan dialects rest strong. Surely there's no need to preserve it here.
There's enough I need to preserve, laddie. In the last 10 years, we've just had an invasion of Sassenachs. Now, it's mere an ale that's brought in.
Even in deepest Buchan, the oil industry has resulted in school playgrounds resounding with the accents of Texas or the home counties, alongside the native Scots. But as long as the dialect is relevant to the way of life of the children, it'll persist. The bairns are clet skill.
Well, but sheep, coos, and what wee lammies are getting off a big. And when I got a dog, because it started killing, and we had to put it down, and the other one was getting a bit ill, so we had to put it down and all. And we've got a load of cats.
And what is your mum and dad do?
Well, dad's a farmer, mum's just a housewife.
Aye.
And dad works out at Croft End, and sometimes I go every Saturday and I help with the beasts. And Nomi feeds his calf. And I've helped dad put out stacks and the beasts a while ago. A lot of the lambs are kind of getting off a big now, and I'll be going to water the mart in a while.
Mm-hmm. Do you grow vegetables in the farm?
Well, I grow tatties, neeps, corn, and then acorn, barley.
Is that a big farm?
Well, no, really. Maybe it can get bigger and you can get little rings, but it's just about middle size.
No matter how rich the dialect or the literature in Scots is, the assumption that English is the language of authority is so strong that an alternative policy which might encourage and expand the children's use of Scots as well as their English is almost unimaginable. Scots is left to its own devices. Headmistress Sheila Sharp, like most folk in the area, speaks the dialect as well as English.
I would speak dialect only when we're doing things like Scots poems and any lessons on maybe Scottish history or things like that. But by and large, we speak English all the time.
Would you say that the majority of people, even though, say, the older generation, even though they speak what they call the Doric here, do most of them accept that in school it should be only an English policy?
I think so. It always has been the accepted thing for as long back as I can remember. And it's just the accepted way that you speak in school. When you go to school, you speak properly, I think, would be the way that they would think about it.
Inevitably, even the broad Buchan could be reduced to yet another regional accent if the English-only policy is pursued in school. In the city of Aberdeen, things are, of course, very different from the country. The rural dialect has some prestige among those who speak it, But the local working-class Aberdeen speech, like city varieties elsewhere, is condemned by lovers of so-called pure Scots or so-called pure English. Middle-class Aberdonians tend to speak with an accent rather than the dialect, but because of the city's close relationship with its hinterland, they still have an interest in the Scots of Buchan. But at times, the gulf between the sounds of city and country speech is so great that one is almost foreign to the other. Sonia Rasmussen is an Aberdeen teenager who published a short story in a Scots anthology a few years back. When she reads her written Scots, though, the sounds of her own English come through the language of the dialect.
There was once a wee cock fra was off a prood o' his cra. Ilka morning, he stood on top of the henhouse and cried sae loud that you heard him for miles around. Ae morning, the farmer came out of the farmhouse and wakit ower to the henhouse. His face was red and he didna look happy. "You crawing brute," he shouted. "You've whacked him up and it's still the middle of the night. Now dinna you cry salute the morn, or I'll make a fine pot of broth out of you."
Sonia's mother is a teacher in one of the city's schools and has first-hand experience of the linguistic balance there.
It is eroded in the city. There's no question of that. It's different because people in the city are different. You know, you're hard-pressed in Aberdeen to live next door to an Aberdonian. It's just like that nowadays. But at the same time, children in playgrounds will speak in the Aberdeen accent, and they'll use the words. A lot of them have gone, but they still use some of them, and their grannies will speak it, so that at home they'll use it. But unfortunately, when they come to school, I think parents have a lot to do with it too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they want for their children, they want the best for their children, and they feel that the best for their child is received pronunciation or whatever it happens to be.
But why did standard English come to dominate Scottish life so thoroughly when before the Reformation the Scottish court, its nobility and its people all spoke Scots, while the nation's records, laws and literature were written in Scots? Then, instead of English being posh and Scots coarse, every style of language was available within Scots, high and low, noble and coarse. You can hear what I mean in two very different examples from the poetry of William Dunbar. The first poem is in his High Oriet style, full of Latin and English terms. It describes the visit of Margaret Tudor, wife of James IV, to Aberdeen in 1511.
O potent princes, pleasant and preclare, great cause thou hast to thank this noble toon, that for to do the honour did not spare their gear, riches, substance and person, thee to receive on maist fair fasoon. Thee for to please, they sought all why and mean. Therefore, sae lang as queen thou bearest croon, be thankful to this burg of Aberdeen.
Dunbar's Oriet ornate Scots. In contrast, in the flighting of Dunbar and Kennedy, a verbal joust between Dunbar and the poet Walter Kennedy from Carrick, Dunbar uses a down-to-earth colloquial Scots. He also reminds us that Galloway continued to be Gaelic-speaking much later than most lowland areas, for in his attack he refers to Kennedy's inability to speak good Scots, or English as it was then called, because of his Irish or Gaelic-speaking background. Dunbar isn't so polite the way he says it.
For worth and fool of all the world refuse, what fairly is, thought thou rejoice to flight, sick eloquence as they in Irshery ooze, and sick is set thy throward appetite. Thou has full little feel of fair and dight. I tak on me a pair of Lowthian hips, sall fairer English mark and mair perfight than thou can blabber with thy Carrick lips.
Scots poetry achieved greatness in the hands of the like of Dunbar and Gavin Douglas, Sir David Lindsay, James I and Robert Henryson. But prose in Scots had great richness as well. This is an example from the mid-16th century, and it describes one of the most important men in the whole of Scottish history.
I saw him every day of his doctrine go hooly and fairly, with a furrin of metrics about his neck, a staff in the ain hand, and good godly Richard Ballenden, his servant, holding up the other oxter from the abbey to the parish kirk. And be the said Richard and another servant lifted up to the pulpit, where he behoved to lean at his first entry. But or he had done with his sermon, he was sae active and vigorous that he was like to ding that pulpit and blods and flee out of it.
Ironically, that portrayal of John Knox as an archetypically Scottish figure isn't quite accurate, for his speech and his writing were unusually anglified for the time. His reformation is blamed for the demise of prose in Scots. The reformers saw closer ties with England as the means of guaranteeing Protestant power in Scotland. When the Reformation established Protestantism here, no full translation of the Bible existed in Scots. There was, however, an English translation available. It was taken up, and in a country where religion dominated the life of the people for three centuries, this gave English enormous prestige. English from then on would be associated with lofty thoughts. After all, via the King James Bible, was it no the language spoken by God? The Catholic faction in Scotland railed against the Protestants' Anglophile tendencies at the time of the Reformation. The Catholics were, of course, pro-French and anti-English, but it wasn't just the political allegiances of the Protestants they were attacking, it was their favouring of the English language, Knap and Sudran speaking English at the expense of Scots.
If King James the Fifth were alive, we hearing yin of his subjects Knap Sudran, declared him a traitor. Whither wilt he declare you triple traitors, who are not only Knap Sudran in your negative confession, but also has caused it to be imprinted in London, in contempt of our native language.
The deed does no grace on us cause, no wealth on earth was happy there's been. Now the word of God rings, wealth is king of all kings, now priestess flock sings. The next is dear gain.
Although different, Scots and English in the written form were similar enough that people of either kingdom could read the other's language. Scottish printers realised that if they anglicised their texts, they would appeal to a larger market in England, and so you have the economic factor coming into play for the first time in an anti-Scots way. The lack of a ready translation of the Bible in Scots was a major blow. Only in the 1980s has Professor Lorimer's translation of the New Testament in Scots filled part of the gap, and it may have arrived centuries too late.
Sign. Jesus was led awa' by the Spirit to the muirs for to be tempted by the devil. When he hadna haen bite nor soup for 40 days and 40 nights and was fell hungrisome, the tempter drew up to him and said, "Can ye are the Son of God? Bid their stones turn into leaves." Jesus answered, "It says in the book, man sanna live and breed alane, but on ilka word that comes forth o' God's mouth."
From the time of the Reformation, English slowly gained ground all over Scotland, and the North East was no exception. In the 18th and 19th centuries, the propaganda against Scots reached its zenith, but there was a reaction, especially among a growing number of poets, like Alexander Ross.
"Speak my ain lead. This guid auld Scots, I mean. Ye're sitherin' gnaps. I count nae worth a preen. We've words a fouth that we can cow rain. Though frae them noo my childer say refrain, and arte my guid auld proverb conferin, neither guid fish nor flesh, nor yet sat hearin."
Among the higher and better educated classes, the English language may be heard spoken in tolerable purity, both as to idiom and pronunciation. There are few who cannot express themselves in English, still fewer who do not familiarly understand it when spoken to them. Unmixed Scotch is never to be heard. The most common dialect is a mixture of Scotch and English, the Scotch used being of the somewhat vicious kind known, I believe, by the name of Aberdeenshire. Even, however, in what is called by courtesy speaking English, or using English words, there is often a sore lack of the genuine English pronunciation.
That comment, taken from the statistical account of 1845, was written by a minister in Banff. Scots speech took a lot longer to adapt to English models than Scots prose writing, and while the upper echelons of society followed fashion and aped English manners, there were always exceptions. Duncan Muirden recalls stories about Jean, Duchess of Gordon.
Oh, aye, there was Jean, Duchess of Gordon. She had a famous expression, and I'll just tell you if you can thought it when I had a minute. She said to the reigning monarch at that time, "There's a country in my country called the Cabrich, for the burns the rooster and the corns the rooster, and the snaw dung on for saxhooks, and never a bolt nor the wald."
Any other expressions that she came up with? Is there no one she said to the king or something, or somebody?
Oh, I should say something down inside him. You see, and he gripped at a bit of her room. So and she stuck it out at 20 minutes and she says, "Hustle yonder, Batman." And he never shifted.
There's called Cale and Aberdeen and Castex and Strabogie. Can I have but a bonny lass? You're welcome to your cookie. You may sit up for the night and drink the little bread daylight. Give me a lass, be clean and tight to dance the real old bogey. In cotillons, the French excel, John Bull loves country dances. Spaniards dance fandangos, we'll mind here an almond Francis. Foursome reels the Scots delight, the threesomes they dance wondrous light, but twosomes ding o out of sight, dance hey the real old bogey. Lads, in view your partner wheel, we'll each a blithesome bogey. I'll tag his lassie to myself, she looks so keen and bogey. The piper lad, by up to spring, the country fashion is the thing, to pray the moose ere we begin to dance the real old bogey.
This is the work of another member of the Northeast aristocracy, the Duke of Gordon's Cald Cale in Aberdeen.
Now ilka lad has got a lassie, view all doited fogey, and ta'en a fling upon the grass as they do in Strabogie. But o' the lasses looks sae fain, we canna think ourselves to hain, for they maun hae or come again to dance the real old bogey. Oh, the lads have done their best, like true men, oh, Strabogie. We'll stop a while and take a rest and tipple bit the cogie. Come down, my lads, and take your glass and try all other days of passing, wishing health to every lass to dance the low bogie.
All the latent Scots enthusiasts among the aristocracy and literati haven't stopped the slow decline of Scots elements in our speech and their replacement over the years by English words and phrases. For individuals don't change the weight of society's attitude against the dialects. Many teachers and educationalists today still regard dialects erroneously as corrupt English rather than what remains of a great national asset. At Dromoke School in Deeside, Ian Hendry reflects on the incongruous position of individuals like himself carrying the responsibility of educating children in their own culture.
You have some very good work going on, but only in a very small number of schools. Mm-hmm. And it invariably stems from a personal interest which the teacher has.
Do you think there's something unusual in a country where the native culture is a minority interest?
Yes, I think it's very, very sad. There have been various official reports about the language. In fact, one of the most recent was one called Scottish English, and it makes this very point, that in England they learn English literature, in France they learn French literature, in German the pupils study German literature, in Scotland they do nothing. And I think possibly it is as a result of the fact that for generations, forms of dialect were frowned upon by the education profession, and in many cases they tried to eliminate the usage by children. When I was at school, I wouldn't have dared use my dialect in the classroom because I would have been punished for it.
What kind of effect do you think that attitude has in children?
I think it didn't make me forget the dialect, and if anything, it made me all the more certain I was going to hold on to it. Mm-hmm. It made me a bit mixed up as a young child. I thought, why can I speak like this to my parents and in the playground? Why can I not speak like this in the classroom? But as an ex-English teacher, I realised the necessity of having a common English language for communication, but that should not be at the exclusion of dialect.
For the lads of the remote skill, Scots isn't just the language of the playground or the firm, it's motorbikes as well.
My dad bought a new bit of ground down the back of my house, and it's got a great big deep ditch down the bottom, and in it there's all this puddock spawn and ahing. And as I was coming down in the motorbike, and because it didn't have any back brakes at the time, I was coming, I let it rip, and it was just going, honging down the hill. And I forgot that I had brakes, so I was trying to reach the front ones, but I didn't. And there was a great big humpy-like thing at the bottom, it was just there naturally. And there was a plank sitting on it, and I was coming, hogging down this hill, and I hit the hill thing, and the plank, the front wheel hit the plank, and the plank went, like a javelin.
I thought, oh yes, this is good fun, so I got my motorbike going, and I went hogging down the park, and I tried to jump it, but I managed, but the back wheel got caught on the other side, and I went out of the tunnel, guys.
In the hands of Ian Hendry, the future of the dialect in Dee Side is reasonably secure, but it would be much more secure if its importance was given more widespread official recognition.
I think kids will be able to retain their dialect forms for a further generation, but I think in the interim period, far more work has to be done at an official level. They ask us to teach things these days which we're asked to provide a very broad curriculum, and I know that a number of teachers are likely to say, oh, here's something else added to the ever-increasing amount of things that we have to do. But I think as part of our basic culture, this is very, very important that more teachers participate in using dialect and Doric forms of language in the classroom.